Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, live in Los Angeles on a Tuesday. It's The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, 1 hour from now. The Herd hierarchy is the playoff picture. Not as muddy now. It's starting to take shape. We know who the best teams are, the worst teams are, and we kind of have a feeling the teams in the middle either have it or they don't. So 1 hour from now, The Herd hierarchy, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Well, I gave myself until Thanksgiving to render an opinion on Daniel Jones, and here we are.
It was a rule in the show. We have several rules. Don't compare anyone to Tom Brady. And we're going to decide on Daniel Jones by Thanksgiving. So is it a hard Thanksgiving, or are we going to wait until Sunday's game?
I have made my mind up.
I feel like we have enough material.
We have enough materials. Let's start with this. So years ago, there was a quarterback named Jake Locker. He went to the University of Washington. He was a high school All-American, went to his local school, Washington, and Steve Sarkisian was his coach. Now, Sark is a college quarterback, right? So Sark's always been good with quarterbacks. He's good with offenses, right? Whether he's a great head coach or not, debatable, but he's good with quarterbacks. And Jake Locker came out after a year with Sark, and in college, he completed 54% of his throws. He was like Tebow on steroids. He was like a better version of Tebow. And he went to the Tennessee Titans at 8, and I said on the air, it's not going to work. If your college coach is known for mentoring quarterbacks and you complete 54, 55% of your throws, it can't be that hard. Well, when Daniel Jones came out, I didn't like him getting picked at 6. Like Locker, he's athletic. He does some things. He runs around. I mean, he's got some skills. But he completed 59% of his throws in college with David Cutcliffe at Duke, who's a great quarterback mentor. It's not like he had a defensive coach or Jake Locker had a defensive coach. They had coaches that elevate quarterbacks. The Mannings are very close to David Cutcliffe. And Daniel Jones, coming out of college, could not complete 60% of his throws in a bad conference, the ACC, like Jake Locker couldn't complete 55% in a bad conference, the Pac-12. So I came in very skeptical. And now I have all this tape and film and games, and he's still average. It's time to move on. You got to get into the Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. You got to go big. It's New York City. Russell Wilson wants to go to a big city. Deshaun Watson wants to reboot his brand and go to a big city. They don't want to go out into the sticks. And it's time to get a new GM. Dave Gettleman, 4 years. You don't get 4 years to build an offensive line, and it's still putrid. The Chargers rebuilt theirs in 1. The Packers entered this season with a shaky O-line. It's already good, and that's despite losing people to injuries. As far as the coaching staff, you can't win in this league with a bad quarterback. I would give Joe Judge another year. Bill Belichick got fired in Cleveland. Okay, it's hard to win when you're bad at quarterback. They're bad at quarterback, and they have other issues. But at GM, you don't get 4 years to build an O-line. And you shouldn't have taken, let's be honest, Daniel Jones at 6. It can't be that hard. Offense is not that hard in 2021. Think about this. The Saints don't have Michael Thomas. They don't have Alvin Kamara. And they got 315 yards this weekend against Philadelphia. With Jalen Hurts. He's like a kid. And then Arizona had their backup quarterback, Colt McCoy. And they have no DeAndre Hopkins. And they go to Seattle and San Francisco and win. And this week they had 413 yards offense. Backup quarterback, no star receiver. With a good O-line, not special. It ain't this hard. It can't be this hard. Everything with the Giants on offense looks like a struggle. I don't want to hear about talent. Daniel Jones, off a bye week. The Giants have plenty of good wide receiving talent. Tony and Galladay and Evan Ingram and Darius Slayton and Saquon Barkley, who's not the same after the injury, but he's a nice receiving back. It's not that. It can't be this hard. God, if you're in a marriage for 10 years and you're still going to therapy every week, it can't be that hard. You got to be able to sit on the couch, watch TV, and enjoy each other's company. So, you know, you come off a bye, you face a Buccaneers defense that's scrambling on the back end, and if not for an Adoree Jackson touchdown, you didn't have a single legitimate touchdown scoring drive. Colt McCoy had three this weekend. One was 90 yards, one was 87, and one was 67. Come on. I don't want to hear about talent. You just saw 48 hours ago Justin Herbert throw for 380 yards and rush for 90. Okay. The next night, last night, you watched Daniel Jones. Do they look close? I mean, they're the same height. One's more athletic. One with a better arm. One makes better decisions. One throws a more accurate football. It's not this tough. I'd keep Joe Judge. I'd flush everything else out. Here's Joe after the game.
We got to do a better job scoring points. I know it sounds pretty obvious and to the point with it, but I'm going to keep it just very blunt on that right there. We got to do a better job putting our players in position to make plays. There are too many good players. You know, we got to put in a better position to capitalize on it. That's it.
Again, if it looks like a struggle, it's a struggle. An offense in 2021 off a bye can't be that much of a struggle. Screens are hard. Everything's hard. Terrible on third down. Bad on fourth down. Everything looks so difficult. It's time to get into the big boy quarterback sweepstakes. All right, so I want to talk about now Brady and Tampa. It's funny. Expectations generally, for all of us, create happiness or sadness. If your expectations are too high, you get disappointed. If your expectations are low and something decent happens, you're overjoyed. So Tampa last year, if you remember, we kept waiting for it to click. Right? We were like, eh, it just doesn't look right. It didn't look right. And then they had the bye, and they beat a bunch of bad teams, Detroit and Atlanta. And we're like, yeah, they're great. But their offense wasn't great against Green Bay. It wasn't great against Washington. And really, their defense won the Super Bowl, not their offense, against Kansas City. So this year, we're like, it's going to be a lot smoother for the Buccaneers. I said that. It's going to be different this year. We got preseason. It's the second year. We got OTAs. And it's the exact same. Last year, Tampa averaged 29.5 points a game. This year, they averaged 31. They were 7-3 at this point last year. Last year, they allowed 22.6 points a game. Now, this year, they're allowing 22.2 points a game, and their record is 7-3. It's the same team. Why wouldn't it be? They brought back all the same players and the same coaches in the same division. We keep thinking that Tampa has this next gear. But all the inconsistencies of last year are here this year. They still have a really old quarterback who's not athletic and dynamic physically. The weakness of the team last year was secondary because of age and inexperience, and it's now secondary because of inexperience and injuries. Their special teams are okay, but you'd never trust them in a big spot. And their running game is underwhelming last year and underwhelming this year. Last year, they were 29th in rushing attempts. This year, they're 31st in rushing attempts. We keep waiting for them to burst through because Kansas City has that capability. We've seen Kansas City at the top end. They've got another gear, and the Chiefs right now are not hitting it. They're getting closer, but they're not hitting it. I think Dallas has a really high-end offense if Amari Cooper is healthy and Tyron Smith. I think their offense is Aaron Rodgers. If he can finally get a healthy backfield and offensive line this year, I think they could take it to another level. I think Arizona could jump to another level. So there are offenses in this league. They're kind of simmering. They either have a quarterback that's hurt like Kyler Murray or like key components that are hurt like Green Bay. Or like Kansas City, they got a little loose. Mahomes' big play got a little loose. But Tampa's not that team. They're the exact same team. There is no higher ceiling. What they are is very good, and you cross your fingers that Tom Brady will provide magic in the postseason, because you know he normally does. But I'm watching him last night, and I'm thinking, Tampa doesn't have a problem. The problem's my expectations. The problem is I'm thinking, oh, they're the Chiefs and they're Arizona when they get Kyler back and they're Dallas. No, they're not. They got an old quarterback, average special teams, no running game, and a secondary I don't trust. and they'll win only in the postseason if Brady is magical, which he mostly is. But my expectations the last 2 years have been out of whack. Why would they be different this year? It's the same exact offense and defense and running game of last year. It's the same secondary issues, same average special teams. Why wouldn't they be? It's the same players and same coaches. Tom, afterwards.
We play better. Tom, better for all of us when we play better. Better for our quality of life. I mean, every day that goes by is closer to the end of the season, and every game is more important because there's fewer of them, and you don't get him back. So we're at a decent point, but we could play a lot better than we played. And, 7-3, through 10 games, there's a lot to learn from, and hoping our best football is ahead of us.
Well, coming up next, the definitive opinion, which has always been right on Baker Mayfield. You're going to agree with me, even if you're a Browns fan. And I'm actually going to back him coming up next. Plus, Nick Wright for 30 minutes today.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You are now entering the No Bull Zone, sponsored by Credible Great Rates with none of the bull. So Baker Mayfield is getting clobbered in Cleveland right now, and he's getting very testy, and he's pushing back, and he's getting booed. And before I start my rant today, just here's a sample of his attitude and his current demeanor as he's getting ripped by the press in Cleveland and booed by some of the fans.
I'd be the first to tell you I played like so it's not about accountable, and I don't owe you guys any of that. I owe that to my teammates, and I talk to them, so that's what matters.
Baker, what did you make of some of the booing there in the second half from the fans?
Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet while we're on offense and trying to operate, so don't really care.
Oh, boy. The only reliable opinion on Baker Mayfield in America has always been mine. No, I mean, that's it. The Browns were too high on him. Fans were too high on him. The media petrified of getting roasted if they're wrong with their vanilla takes. He'll be good. He'll be good. That was the safe take. My opinion is the only one that's ever been right, which was everybody was too high and unrealistic on Baker initially, and now they're beating the crap out of him, and it's not fair. Shocker. Fans are overly emotional in Cleveland. You thought he was Jim Kelly to start, and now you think he's Kyle Allen. So let me once again give the only reasonable opinion on Baker in America, because I don't get emotionally involved in this stuff. It's all biz. You know what I'm saying? A, he's never been a number one pick talent. B, he is a franchise quarterback, but he needs a ton of help around him. And C, he's way too cocky, too much ego for the position to rely on him. Again, all accurate from day one. But right now, Cleveland is roasting him, and it's totally unfair. Did you watch him against the Lions? He's in pain. He's got a bad heel. He's got a bad knee. He's got bad ribs. He's got a torn labrum. His shoulder's still not recovered. That wasn't Baker Mayfield. That was 50% of Baker. So Cleveland fans were outrageously delusional to start, and now you're unbelievably critical and unfair now. So once again, America's honesty broker, me, delivers the truth. Here's the solution. And since I've been right the entire time, why don't you just sit there, stop talking, and listen, because I'll pave the way to your success. I should frankly own the franchise at this point. Instead, I just own their fan base. I would sit Baker against Baltimore. Yes, and you're going to lose with Case Keenum because Baker, as I've told you, is a better version of Case with a much quicker release and a much better arm. And this is not arrogance, it's accuracy. I would sit him against Baltimore because the Browns have a bye after Baltimore. And then I would get 2 weeks of Baker Mayfield finally being healthy and they'll lose to Baltimore. But then I get him back for the final five games. It'll be the healthiest Baker can be, and I can make a true evaluation on him. And he's going to beat Baltimore at home, and he's going to beat the Raiders at home, and he's going to lose to Green Bay, but beat the Steelers on the road and beat the Bengals again and go 10-7, and you'll be a playoff team. And as a front office, I'll get a reasonable evaluation of him because he'll be 90% healthy, which is frankly where most quarterbacks are during the season. They're sore, they're beat up, but they're about 90% healthy. But you were delusional initially, and now you're outrageously critical now. And you've been wildly inaccurate with both. If you want a true evaluation, sit the kid down for 2 weeks, get him as healthy as he can be, because what you saw Sunday is a kid with a bad knee and a bad heel and a bad shoulder and a torn labrum, and you're like, he's no good. Who's good playing at 40 to 50%? Mahomes isn't. I've seen Mahomes on a bad toe. He's not the same quarterback. So there you go. By the way, to prove my point, Baker's passing numbers this year are better than last year at this point. His completion percentage is higher. His passer rating is higher. His total passing yards are higher. This is the best Baker until he fell apart. Now he's Frankenstein out there. He's only missing a bolt in his neck. But the delusion initially and the criticism now is absurdly off. And you're welcome. You can take this for free, use it to get into playoffs, come back in about 6 weeks. Maybe I'll take your calls. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
I enjoyed that, Colin.
That was definitive.
Well, listen, we're all about accuracy
on
this show. So after last night's Bulls game, Chance could be heard saying fire Nagy, and fans might be getting their wish. According to a report on Pro Football Talk, Mark Konkol, who previously worked for the Chicago Sun-Times and now reports at Patch.com, said that the Bears have informed Matt Nagy that he'll be fired after Thursday's game at Detroit. A top source with knowledge of the decision told Konkol that Nagy was informed of his fate yesterday. Also, the Bears have never fired a coach mid-season.
Yeah, they don't do that.
In their history.
Yeah, their ownership doesn't do that.
The Bears have not responded to a comment from Pro Football Talk, and Nagy is expected to speak this after, scheduled to speak this afternoon. Look, I would not be surprised if Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, for that matter, are not with the Bears after this season. I would put more of the burden of responsibility on the front office in this situation, as I tend to do. I tend to look at front offices first when firings like this happen, especially mid-season.
There's two advantages to Chicago, though. Denver's going to be the best job opening if they fire Vic Fangio. But Chicago will arguably be the second best opening. And Joy, it's an interesting year for candidates. There's some interesting offensive coordinators out there.
Right. And listen, if he's lost the locker room and lost the fan base to that degree, maybe you don't have a choice. I'm kind of a defender of coaches. You tend to be as well. I think it's a sign of dysfunction if you're firing a coach in the middle of the season, no matter what sport it is, especially depending on where in the season you fire them. If you fire a coach within the first couple weeks of the season, it's on the front office. You needed the whole offseason to see 2 more weeks to decide this wasn't the guy. Obviously, this isn't the situation. They're third in the NFC North. It's obviously been a disappointing season overall, but he's never had a losing season. He's been to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I don't know what exactly you're looking for.
Well, how about this? He'll get another job, but it's time for a new voice. You can make that argument.
I think you can make that argument, yes. And if you're going to make a change, you should make it early in Justin Fields' career.
Yeah, and another thing is, if you make it early, you're going to get the best candidates. Like, because Bieniemy will have suitors, and Byron Leftwich will have suitors, and Brian Daboll will have suitors. So if you're the first one to say, we're getting a new coach, you could beat Denver to the best candidate, because Denver's the best opening potentially. That roster's ready to win. They need a quarterback and the right offensive coach. Chicago and the Raiders, you can argue what's better. The O-line for the Bears, they're on like year four. It's a mess.
The offensive line is a pretty good reflection of what they've been able to put together. But I also think that you have to, if you're going to move on completely. Don't move on halfway, because the front office has had a say in these players and what's going on here as well. If you're going to do it, do a clean slate and give Justin Fields a platform to grow. Obviously, he's the guy, so I don't think you're going to run into a situation where you're bringing in a new coach and he's like, oh, you know, I didn't draft Justin Fields. So, look, it's an unfortunate situation at this point in Chicago, but if the fans are that far gone, and then you got to move on. Now, they play the Lions on Thursday and are 3.5-point favorites over them. So, speaking of moving on, Packers kicker Mason Crosby is 2 for 6 on field goals over the last 3 weeks, but Coach Matt LaFleur said his job is not in jeopardy.
That never falls squarely on one individual. our operation has got to improve, and that's from the snap to the hold to the kick. So we'll continue to work on that, and then, you know, but certainly have a lot of confidence in Mason. Never would have sent him out there if we didn't on a 54-yarder, and he came through. So I just think that shows the level of confidence that we have him in, not only in him, but that entire group to go out there and execute. And they did a great job on that one. And then certainly you got to make the chip shots.
It's been a rough year for kickers overall.
Yeah, I'm going to blame the long snapper for that. Okay. And by the way, you know, that's why we sent him out there. Now, you sent him out there because he's your kicker on the roster.
Right.
I mean, come on.
I think Skip dubbed him Mason Crossbar. I think I want to give Skip credit for that one.
Listen, they're
supporting him. He's made 65% of his field goals this season. It's the second lowest mark of his 15-year career.
He looks washed, yeah.
I never know what it is with kickers, because they can surprise you, obviously, but that's not what you want in your kicker. you want clutch. You want reliability, not surprises. They host the Rams on Sunday and a 0.5-point underdog, according to Fox Bet. Listen, especially at this point in the season, you don't want your kicker dealing with confidence issues. It's a lot of these games come down to kickers, and Mason's been struggling, and I'm with you. I don't know if I'm blaming it on the guy holding the ball, but he's not going anywhere for now. So LeBron James and Isaiah Stewart got into a scuffle on Sunday following LeBron making contact with Stewart in the face. Everyone keeps saying it's an elbow, but I feel like it was like an elbow fist follow through kind of situation.
That's what it looked like, yeah.
Well, Stewart's eye began bleeding. I don't know if you didn't see this, or you haven't been on the internet for the past couple days, but it was a messy scene there in Detroit. Both players were ejected, and according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, LeBron did try to get in touch with Stewart following the game. He said, "I'm told LeBron James has made clear, whether it was on the court or post game, that it was inadvertent to hit Isaiah Stewart. They didn't mean to do it, and it was not intentional. I'm told LeBron did try to track Isaiah Stewart's number down post game to apologize to Stewart again and let him know it was inadvertent to hit his face." Well,
I thought it was inadvertent. I didn't think it was a.
I don't know. And I think your reputation matters in these spots. LeBron's not a dirty player. He's not a.
No, watch this. I mean, they're pushing on it. Well, maybe, I don't know. It's you know, it is what it is.
I think you can make a dirty play. You cannot be a dirty player and make a dirty play.
That's a good way to put it.
He did definitely mean to move Isaiah Stewart off of him. So I'm not making excuses for LeBron. Like, he obviously hit him. Otherwise, there wouldn't be blood on his face.
Well, here's my concern. You got a 20-year-old who lacks self-awareness. I'd probably keep him away from the game for a couple of weeks, not two games.
Well, he's only suspended for two games. So the league handed suspensions down for both players. LeBron received one game for recklessly hitting Stewart, which I have no problem with it. Like, obviously the timing of it, they're playing the Knicks tonight. You would have loved to see LeBron out there, but that doesn't matter. Like, this happened, and I do think you have to set some precedent for that kind of contact.
I guess it wasn't quite as inadvertent as I'd like to state.
Inadvertent is not quite the word I would describe, or accidental. I don't know that he meant to do that to Isaiah Stewart. I don't believe that. Yeah. But LeBron is a big man. So if you make contact with your elbow/fist with someone's face and you're LeBron's size, that could be the outcome. And it was. Now, obviously, Stewart took it to a whole nother level, running away from guards and coaches and people. I mean, it was a scene. And he has been suspended for two games. So they will face off again on November 28th here in L.A. And that they'll both be there, which I don't love that. I do wish there was more time between them seeing each other again. But yeah. That's what the NBA said.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Well, what a pleasure it is. Nick Wright usually joins us on Wednesday, but this is a short week and his schedule has changed. And Nick and I got to watch the Cowboys Chiefs game in person Sunday, which was a big win for him. I had a little money on Dallas and he had all his feels on the Chiefs and they won and they looked pretty good. Now he's joining us here on the set. I think this is the first time in several years, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. The new Nick Wright with the new hipper haircut. I like the look on you.
Oh,
now.
Thanks, buddy. This is the first time I've been on here with hair.
It's Jared Leto, the actor.
Oh, Jared Leto. Joy, quiet your laughter over there.
That's what you look like.
I wasn't prepared for that.
Can I tell you something, though?
Okay.
As I watch the show every day, as every true American sports fan does, I think your Baker Mayfield rant to open this segment was your single best, most definitive rant of 2021. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's the first rant I was in studio for.
As your mentor, I was performing for
I you. Really felt that way. I really felt like, oh, Colin's trying to impress me. Colin, I mean, he's looking straight down barrel. I was like, is this scripted? My God, it was great.
Oh,
it was stirring.
Much. By the way, let's start with the Daniel Jones. And my takeaway was, it can't be this hard. Like, if you're in a marriage 10 years in and you need therapy every week, it's not working. It can't be that hard. Every 5-6 years, let's go see a couple's therapists.
Sure.
We're arguing about money. I look at Daniel Jones and I'm like, we're 3 years in. Screen passes are a challenge.
I know Judge is getting killed today. Daniel Jones is getting killed today. The common denominator between them is the person that picked both of them, and that's Gettleman. And Gettleman, after he drafted Daniel Jones, said, talk to me in 3 years. Okay, it's been 3 years. He looks awful. His first year in the league, he had the highest fumble rate in modern NFL history.
He did.
He then seemed to clean that up a bit, but the trade-off has been he doesn't score touchdowns anymore.
Right.
They have 20 touchdowns, 17 picks. His last 2 years, he started basically every game. No, he is going to have a long career as a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
But he's not a starter in this league. I don't know if Joe Judge is a coach. I do know, or a head coach. I do know that somebody else is going to have to make those decisions now. Because the Giants, keep in mind, they had the number 2 pick. They took Saquon. Then they had the number 34 pick that year. They took the Will Hernandez guy who kept getting holding calls yesterday.
Yeah.
And then they had 3 first-round picks the next year. Daniel Jones, Dexter Lawrence, who's been okay. They traded up for first-round DeAndre Baker. He now plays for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
He spent 1 year with them. Yeah. It hasn't been good.
No, it hasn't. And by the way, I say this, as much as we mock the Cowboys at times, they've had 4 home run picks in the last 2 years, and now that Jalen Smith is gone, nobody is dramatically overpaid. It's like DeMarcus Lawrence should be healthier.
Yep.
But they, you know, so in the end, and we don't consider, you know, the Cowboys as buttoned up as we'd like, but you look around and you see talent in a lot of these picks. They've hit home runs. So I want to go. I said this about Brady and the Bucs. If you go look at all the data, they're the exact same team as last year. There is no upside. They are a very good team, and you cross your fingers on Brady to be magical in the postseason. But whereas Arizona's offense, when Kyler gets healthy, whew, and Dallas, if Tyron and Amari play with CeeDee Lamb, whew, Chiefs, we've seen the next level. But not that they were lucky last year. They were fortunate that they played lousy teams all at the end and got Taylor Heineke and Matt LaFleur's weird coaching, and the Chiefs got hurt. But I don't think there's another level. This is what they are, which is good, but not special on most Sundays.
So I think I happen to totally agree with you on that. I wish I didn't, but I do. Last year, they were 7-5. Then they hit the bye and they're like, oh, everything got fixed after the bye. No, they played 4 awful teams to end the year. And then if we remember the playoffs, first round they're playing Taylor Heineke. That is a 1-score game into the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Second round, they're down 2 scores to New Orleans in the second half. New Orleans is driving. And Jared Cook fumbles and they go score. Then Breeze interception, they score. Breeze interception, they score, and it's over. It's like New Orleans had them right where they wanted them, and then
for the third time
in a row.
Yeah.
The Packer game, the Packers play as poorly as a team can play in the first half, totally botched the end of the first half, and then Brady throws 3 second-half picks. Green Bay can't take full advantage, but we remember it differently because the Chiefs were the dominant team in the league last year. They were 14-1 in the regular season. They rolled through the postseason. They won a playoff game. Mahomes got hurt in. And then the Chiefs, for the first time ever under Mahomes up to that point, looked awful, and it was against Tampa. So we looked at Tampa as, oh, my God, they were a juggernaut. They were not a juggernaut.
Nor
I know
they
won the Super Bowl, but they weren't a juggernaut. And I think it's risky in the NFL. It's not the NBA where if you win the title, bring everyone back. It's risky to say, while everyone else is trying to get better, our plan is to just stay the exact same, bring everyone back from the previous year, and now they're dealing with some injuries. It was good to see Gronk back. I don't know if and when they're going to play AB. So I agree with you. I don't think they're a bad team by any stretch.
They're a good team.
But I do think it warrants mentioning in the NFC, and I say this a lot because I don't think people totally understand it. Packers, Cardinals, Rams, Cowboys, Bucks. That's 5 teams. By definition, at least one of them won't win a playoff game. Only four teams move on to the second round. So one of those five is gone in the wild card round. I don't know who it's going to be, but right now I think you have a strong of a case to make that it'll be the Bucks as any of the other five.
So I want to talk about the story. Did you say Pro Football Talk, Joy had it, that Matt Nagy is going to get whacked after Thanksgiving? Now, I could defend him and say he got Trubisky to the playoffs twice. He's never in a full season had a losing record. My coaching contacts have always been lukewarm on him, a little frenetic on the sidelines. He didn't really call plays in Kansas City as much as you'd like. Bieniemy's been more, has more experience doing that. So they've always been, he's okay, he's a nice guy, people like him. But my guys were always a little more critical of him than I was. I liked the guy. Trubisky, I thought, was mostly awful. And he got him to the playoffs twice in a division with Aaron Rodgers. But it's interesting. You can make the argument today that it's a really good year for offensive coaches. Bieniemy's on the market. Leftwich is on the market. Brian Daboll is on the market. If you want to go defense, there's Eberflus from Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. That it's the rare year where you've got some guys with 3 and 4 and 5 years coordinating, and they're really good.
Or he doesn't have 3 or 4 years, but Kellen Moore. I think Kellen Moore is probably going to go get a job if Dallas doesn't elevate him.
College, there's almost never a good year.
Yeah.
Where you have multiple good, you have to roll the dice. But I do think, are you okay if Nagy gets whacked?
I think they should have fired him Sunday. I think the whole logic of we can't fire him Sunday because we play Thursday is illogical. Because I understand that you don't want to have the flux of a coaching change on a short week. But I believe, and it seems like it's kind of being confirmed via reporting, they decided after Friday's loss, you can't lose the way they did to the Ravens without Lamar. It's your fifth loss in a row. Can't happen.
Right.
So they got to fire him. And now the logic is, but we don't want to do it on a short week. But then the problem is, well, you're probably going to beat the Lions. You're going to fire him after a win? Maybe, maybe not. Then you extend it further. So if they basically decided you lost your job Sunday, but we're not going to announce it until the day after Thanksgiving, I mean, that's fine, I guess. But yeah, it shouldn't take this long to be competent on offense. And that's the problem. Is I know they had Trubisky, but we are seeing so many teams that if you have the right guy, you look functional on offense. The Bears don't look functional on offense. The Giants don't look functional on offense. It's not tenable in the modern NFL to consistently look dysfunctional on offense. And he's been so weird with the quarterback thing. After the game Sunday, this guy, it was reported, but it wasn't discussed much. He was asked point blank, if both are healthy, who's your starter, Dalton or Fields? And he wouldn't answer. We're back on this damn treadmill about wanting to play Andy Dalton. I don't understand it. So, yeah, I think you move on from him the sooner the better.
One more question before we go to the break, because I have some stuff on the other end. Baker Mayfield, my suggestion, sit him, then the bye. I get a fair evaluation last 5 weeks. For those five, they may be favored. But the criticism now is unjust, like the delusion initially was unjust. Am I close?
Well, you've been kinder to Baker today than I would have thought. Yeah. Because I said on First Things First Monday when we were asked the Baker Mayfield topic, I said, unfortunately, Colin Cowherd appears to have been right about all of it. It pains me. Yeah. But Baker's storming, not doing the press conference.
Not good.
Not good. His wife with the... And by the way... So quick sidebar, because I'm not athlete-level prominent, obviously. You kind of are. But we are public people that get criticized on the internet.
Yeah.
What is up with the family members going online arguing for people? Like, do you know how mortified I would be? Do you know how many people say terrible things to me? People don't all call me Jared Leto. Let me tell you that much, Colin Cowherd. People say terrible things to me.
Right.
People say terrible things to Joy. They say terrible things to you. Well, you can't have your spouse, your mom, this applies to Mahomes with their mom, fighting your battles for you on the internet. You got to. It's a bad look for everyone. With all that said, on the Baker thing specifically, I think he has really hurt himself this year, and I think it is a good lesson for young athletes to learn. You get no credit for playing hurt. Lamar had a cold. Didn't play. Not criticized today. Last time we saw Lamar, lost to the Dolphins. This week, he's sick again. He's sick a lot, by the way. It's an odd thing. But nobody is like, hey, he didn't play. Not on him. Baker's got a broken shoulder, a torn labrum, a bad knee, and a bad foot. He's getting booed at home. You know why? Because his Pippen was right. You don't get credit for the bad back game when you score 8 points. You the flu game, you score 40, good for you. But if you're going to play hurt, you better play well, or else people will just use it against you. Baker should have shut it down.
Yep.
3 weeks ago.
Kyler Murray could have played.
Yes.
He's like, you know what? We won in San Francisco with Colt. It's kind of the same offense. I just want to get healthy.
Correct. Absolutely. And by the way, that helps him. And for a guy that's Baker and Lamar, same draft class, both fighting for a contract. We know Lamar's getting his. The question is how much. Baker at this point looks like he's not going to get his. I wonder if he shut it down 5 weeks ago, got healthy, and then looked better if he would have. I think it was a bad, bad decision by him.
More with Nick. In the Herd, next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What young people don't sometimes understand, some do, that the power of the wife is influential in most crucial decisions. Russell Wilson's wife is Ciara.
Yeah.
Buried in the Pacific Northwest, her husband's not happy, comes home every day from work, and probably grumbles to her. Russell Wilson, 1 year from now, is he a Seahawk?
No, I think he's a Giant, right? I mean, a Giant or Dolphin, one of the two.
Miami or New York.
Miami or New York. Here's the, like, he's not going, I think Ciara deserves and is going to have a say in this. They're partners, they're both, you know, they both have major careers going on their own.
She's an entertainer, and Seattle is buried in the Pacific Northwest.
Exactly right, which is why the idea that, oh, well, what if Cleveland wants to move on from Baker? Russell Wilson can't tell his wife, honey, I got us out of here. Where are we going? Cleveland. Right. Listen, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I am not Midwest or Rust Belt shaming, but he also couldn't tell her we're going to Kansas City. If you're going to leave there, it's going to be for a big-time coastal city. And the Giants, by the way, the one thing I'll give Gettleman credit for, he won't get to use it, but they have that Bears draft pick. So they have their pick and the Bears pick. We know Miami traded their own pick, but they still have a surplus of picks. I think one of those two teams makes a play for Russell Wilson.
By the way, remember when Brady, the story was broken? Who broke the story on Brady to Tampa?
Oh, I think it was you.
Anyway, Giselle, and I was told this, it came down to Chargers-Tampa. She wanted warm weather. She was done with Boston winters. Like, wives matter. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down to big decisions, Giselle said, Tom, Miami, Tampa, L.A. And they didn't want to travel with all their kids all the way west, so they chose Tampa. Chargers were second. Now, LeBron, it wasn't inadvertent, but Joy brought up that you cannot be a dirty player but have a dirty moment.
So I don't know if it was a dirty moment. I think it was a reckless moment. I think he definitely was trying to do what he did but not hit the guy in the face. I think he was trying to hit Isaiah Stewart, like, get off me type of thing, but I don't think he was trying to hit him in the face. And you could see, by the way, his immediate reaction. Those are hard to fake, and with respect to Space Jam A New Legacy, I've seen LeBron act. He's good. I don't know if he's winning any awards. So that's, like, that was an authentic reaction of, oh, darn, I didn't mean to hit you in the face.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, though, Colin, because I think the whole sports world disagrees with me on this. I think you will agree. So if you're going to suspend LeBron again, now, if Jokic got one game for the incredibly dirty play on Markieff Morris, if that's the threshold for one, then LeBron should have gotten zero. But regardless, if you're going to suspend him a game, I think Adam Silver should have the discretion. Stars serve short-term suspensions at home on non-nationally televised games. So LeBron, what is your next game at Staples that isn't on national TV? That's when the suspension kicks in. Who benefits from LeBron James not playing on TNT tonight in his one trip a year in Madison Square Garden?
Well, here's why I agree with you. All these leagues are TV shows.
Yes.
That's where all the money comes from. Secondly, is it's subjective anyway. So we all know there is no, you know, this is two games, that's six. I mean, Joy and I both thought LeBron would get one or two, the kid would get eight. So if it's already subjective, then let's not pretend that there's a definitive line in the sand and a menu for this stuff. I'm just going to pick when it hurts the league least.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just the league. It's the television ratings for national TV. But also, we don't think of it because it's New York City. But let's say their game tonight, instead of being at MSG, was their one trip a year to Indiana. Do you know how much that sucks for the fans of Indiana who bought tickets? I don't want to sound like the guy that says, what about the kids? But the kids are like, this is my time to see LeBron. And because of this, he misses that game. Fans in LA have 41 chances a year to see him.
That's right.
And so I just think it's not just LeBron, but if a star, you know, if a one-name guy, a KD, a Giannis, a LeBron, something like that, similar to how they say, try not to load manage on nationally televised games, the NBA said, okay, you're suspended for your next home game. That way, the fans who have one chance a year to see you, and how many more times do we think, by the way, LeBron's going to play in MSG? We're not getting Knicks-Lakers in the finals, ever. How many years he got left? Three? Call it three. That means he has three appearances. You only played MSG once a year now that you're in the Western Conference. We all lost out on it. That sucks.
No, the other thing is, you could say, well, that'll give stars the initiative to... Stars don't want to get in fights.
Nobody's trying to get suspended.
By the way, the opposite is true. In hockey, send a bench guy against the star, get Patrick Kane into a fight, and they both get the penalty box. So, you know, Morris going after Jokic is actually a strategy.
Absolutely. And I will say, though, because whenever we talk LeBron, people do the LeBron-Jordan stuff. LeBron is now closer in career suspensions to Michael. Now, Michael's was for gambling. It was 140. I'm kidding. I'm sorry. Michael. My bad. Michael quit the sport in the middle of his prime to go play another one. That's the story, right? He just loved baseball. My bad. He wasn't kicked out of the league for gambling. That wasn't it at all. So LeBron suspended. Michael not very often suspended, I guess. My bad.
Okay. It's great to see you. Jared Leto, you've got a little
This is unbelievable. I don't know how long we have.
Is it Leto? We got 10 seconds. What?
You never let me gloat about Chiefs over Cowboys. Your worst sports prediction of the year. I did two segments with you. You didn't let me gloat. That's unfair. I'll see you in 5 years.
Is it Leto or Leto?
I think it's Leto.
Jared Leto, L-E-T-O. I don't know. I see the similarity.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, buddy. Hour two next.